the Campbell County Sheriff's Office, considering how you shot one of theirs. I didn't shoot him. Good luck explaining that in the heat of the moment. I let him think about it. But I'm not letting you waltz out of here armed.
What makes you think I don't have another gun?
Because if you had, you would have used it instead of that 9mm. I'm hefting this 12-gauge with a full-length barrel and loaded with buckshot. I let him think about that. It might not get all of you at this distance, but it will get some of you. That much I can guarantee. It got real quiet. I'm through negotiating, in case you're wondering. There was no response, but something sailed through the air and landed with a soft thunk to my right. I moved in that direction and fished in the snow, finally pulling out a Ruger semi-automatic minus the magazine. He found his voice.
I didn't figure there was any reason to give it to you loaded.
Fair enough, but you better not be lying to me. The ignition on the CJ-7 fired, and I listened as a door opened.
She's inside, a little drugged up, but I've found that makes them easier to handle.
You're not going to get far.
I'll take my chances. Anyway, I've got friends.
So I hear.
Watch your back, Sheriff.
The sound of the door closing was accompanied by the revving of the engine as he spun the Jeep around and circled to the right to what I assumed was the regular road to the school. I unclipped the handheld from my belt and keyed the mic.
Lucian, can you hear me?
Static.
Lucian, if you're reading me, the postman, Rowan, is headed down the hill. Feel free to shoot the Jeep, but I'd like him alive so I can find out where the other woman is and about his partners in this little cabin industry of his.
Static. I listened to the sound of the Jeep as I fastened the radio to my belt and started up the hill. It sounded like the 4x4 was having a hard time negotiating the rutted road, and even as if it might have veered to the right and circled around toward the railroad spur, but sounds were strange and untrustworthy in this kind of storm. Just in case, I pulled Vic's cell phone from my pocket and looked at the lack of bars. Of course, no service. Death-charging my way to the school, I could see the prints where he'd been standing, but also where he had dragged the girl to the other side of the Jeep. And that's what you get for having one shred of trust. Just to make sure, I climbed the steps and yanked the door open. Empty. Leaping off the stoop, I tromped through the shallower snow on the ridge and pulled the radio from my belt.
Lucian, he's got the woman with him, so be careful taking him.
Static. I headed off, following in the tracks of the Jeep, which arced back toward the road we'd taken up from the railroad spur. Now, why would he do that? The road was worse but faster, so maybe he thought his odds were better doubling back and using the train for cover. I had another hike ahead of me, but it was a path I knew, and it was downhill. I sidled my way down the hill and back into the trees where at least I could tell if I was upright. There was a loud clanking noise, and I figured the empty coal train was pulling out. Great, just in time for Rowan to be able to drive on the tracks. Increasing my speed, I finally got to the flat area at the bottom of the gully where I could make better time. The sound of the clanking cars was thunderous, but I could still hear a high, whining sound of tires spinning in the snow in an attempt to find purchase. Moving into a hampered jog, I held the 12-gauge with the butt under my arm in an attempt to keep it steady. There was a spot of darkness up ahead, but I was pretty sure that was either my truck or the buttress at the end of the line. I slowed when I got to the bullet and looked around in all directions, but still didn't see the Jeep. I moved around the ties and stood on the railroad tracks, peering into the distance where the train had disappeared. I could still hear the noise, but could see nothing. It couldn't be more than 100 yards ahead. With a deep breath that imitated a steam locomotive, I pressed off and ran along the uncovered area where the coal cars had sat, finally seeing the Jeep turn sideways in a ditch where Dave Rowan must have pushed his luck just a little too far. The 4x4 was buried at the bottom of the trench, and the only thing it was doing at this point was throwing snow into the wheel wells. I raised the shotgun and pulled the trigger, firing a round into the air a little in front of me so as to avoid any double-aught precipitation. Rowan let off the gas, and his hands shot up to the roof of the CJ-7. I lowered the barrel on him and yelled as I walked closer, "Shut it off!" He did as I said and then raised his hands again. "Where's the woman?" He didn't say anything, and I lowered the barrel of the 12-gauge on him. "Where is Yona?" He smiled a sickening smile and shouted back, "Yona who?"
I yanked the door open and grabbed him by the coat front, shoving the muzzle of the shotgun under his chin and forcing his head back.
Tell me where she is, or I scatter the top of your head all over the insides of the Jeep.
His eyes widened, but his voice still had confidence.
You wouldn't do that.
I slipped the barrel away and blew out the passenger side window. He jumped, and I was betting he soiled himself just a bit.
Aga!
I jacked the slide mechanism, bouncing the empty shell off his chest, and shoved the muzzle back under his chin.
I've had a long day, and I wouldn't press my luck if I were you.
He was sobbing now. Look, it wasn't my idea.
Actually, it was your idea, abducting and selling women out of Arosa, Wyoming. I guess you figured you could get away with it because you were out here in the middle of nowhere, but the game's over.
I don't know where Linda Schaffer is, but I'll find out. You sold Roberta Payne to the car dealer over in Deadwood, but now she's dead, he's dead, and the guy who tried to kill me is dead, and you're going to be dead if you don't tell me where Yona Urecha is right now.
He glanced past me up the hill toward the tracks.
In the train.
I stared at him.
She's in the coal car.
I staggered back and looked up at the tracks, the train long gone.
Damn it!
I pulled out the cuffs I'd borrowed, hooked Rowan to the roll bar on the Jeep, and snatched the keys as I dug back up the hill.
What about me?
I'll try and remember that you're here. I snatched the radio from my belt and keyed the mic.
Lucian, are you there?
Static.
Lucian, the woman, she's in the last coal car, the train that pulled out from the spur. We've got to stop that train.
Static.
Lucian!
Static. I reached my truck and threw the radio into the back, climbed in, fired up the bullet, and yanked the mic from my truck radio, which was more powerful than the handheld.
Lucian, can you read me?
Static.
Damn!
I pulled the selector into gear and began the arduous task of backtracking along the roadway beside the tracks, almost sliding into the Jeep, but then correcting and continuing down the slippery way. It was harder this time, but probably because I was in even more of a hurry. I finally saw the BNSF high rail truck at the end of the spur with its emergency lights on, and floored the bullet, almost slipping down the bank in the process. I steered into the drift, blew by the high rail, and locked up my brakes. All in all, an accidental show of remarkable driving acumen. I threw myself from my vehicle and slapped my hand on the window of the rail truck. Fry dropped his coffee as I yelled into the glass between us, "Stop that train!" Brushing the cup from his lap, he mouthed the word,
"What?"
I slammed the glass again. "There's a woman in the last car, that coal train you're loading." His eyes bugged like headlights as he looked past me down the road at the empty tracks.
"Lord almighty! Get on your radio!"
He shook his head as he rolled down the window.
"There's no radio reception. Something must have happened to the transponders that relay out of Gillette."
I became aware of another vehicle sliding to a stop behind me and turned in time to see Lucian dropping his window.
"What the hell is going on?"
"The woman, she's in the last coal car, that train. Rowan threw her in there in hopes of getting rid of her."
"Like the hobos?"
"Yep, like the
homeless."
I started around. "We've got to catch that train and stop them from loading." Lucian picked up the mic from the floor.
"These damn things aren't working."
"I know." The BNSF driver, Fry, yelled at me.
"That booth is on the north side. There's nobody you can get on our side of that train."
I kicked a tire in full realization that my options were running out.
"Are there any other roads?"
He made a face as he looked off into the fog, the delineation of the horizon lost in all the whiteness.
"One, but you have to go out past the highway, then down the frontage road, and then drive in on the gravel, and it probably hasn't been plowed."
I pulled the cell phone from my pocket. "Who can I call?"
"Nobody. It's a skeleton crew working tonight. We're supposed to load this train and then call it quits."
"Nobody has a phone?" The ludicrousness of this statement coming from me was not lost on me.
"Somebody?" "No, there won't be anybody in the administrative offices, and without radios, you won't be able to get a hold of anybody in the chute section. It's all computer-generated, and besides, as you might have noticed, there's no service out here."
He shook his head.
"There just isn't any way."
I stared at the tracks leading west, my mind racing like a runaway locomotive. I bit the inside of my lip and stared down at the steel wheels of the high-rail gear equipment on his massive truck.
"Oh, yes, there is."
As fast as the driver was working, it was still agonizingly slow. His voice was strained as he shouted down from the cab of the oversized truck,
"This is a really bad idea.
Give me a better one."
We watched as he lined the one-ton truck up with the rails, rapidly backing up and pulling forward.
"And hurry,"
Fry shouted down.
"I don't get this thing right. We get derailed in the first 20 feet, and then it's going to take a hell of a lot longer, I can tell you that much."
With a mechanical whine,
The steel wheels lowered onto the iron rails, just enough to carry the weight of the vehicle, but still allowing the traction to the tires that would provide us with power. The driver jumped from the other side and came to the front, touching a lever and lowering the front high rail wheels onto the track with a loud, jarring noise. He pushed back his hood again and smiled as he shook his head.
"Just so you know, this goes against every safety regulation on the line.
I'll take responsibility." He nodded with the same smile as he turned and walked around, climbing in the driver's side.
"You take responsibility for the three switches between here and the mine?"
Hoisting Lucian up into the cab, I followed, closing the door behind me.
"What about the switches?"
He engaged the transmission, hit the gas, and we lurched forward.
"No radio, no dispatch. We hit one of those switches, and it's turned against us, and we get hit head-on by another mile-long train going in the opposite direction."
I looked down the rails, feeling more and more like a maiden tied to the tracks.
"That would be bad."
He nodded and studied me.
"Very bad."
We gathered speed.
"How fast can this thing go?"
"Pretty damn fast on the straight and flat, faster than you're going to want to go."
"Bet me."
Lucian leaned forward.
"And once we get there, what the hell are you going to want to do?"
"I'll figure that out when it happens."
We were picking up speed, and the high rail began sounding more and more like a train, with the clickety-clack of the rail joints closing time like the second hand on a stopwatch.
"How long does it take to load one of those cars?"
He glanced at the clock on his dash.
"About a minute."
"How many cars per train?"
140, give or take, but they're already failed."
I looked at the clock, too.
"So, where are we on the spur?"
He swallowed.
"I'm betting near the end."
I braced a hand against the dash. "Speed up."
"You want me to go faster than this?"
"Yep." He did as I said, and the snow swirled and whipped around the windshield like galloping ghosts.
"They have to slow the train to load it, right?"
He nodded.
"They just run it at about 3 miles an hour."
His head swiveled around, and then he turned back to look at both Lucian and me.
"Did you see that switch indicator?"
"What does a switch indicator look like?" He glanced out the window.
"A very large, blinking green light."
"No," Lucian interrupted.
"There was a red one."
We both looked at him. The old sheriff shrugged.
"Large, blinking red light to the left."
The driver hit the gas even harder.
"It's a train coming the other way."
Lucian and I looked down the rails, joining in the distance at a vanishing point, fully expecting to see a BNSF locomotive heading straight toward us.
"Where?"
The driver's mouth set in a straight line like a teeter-totter, weighing the odds.
"I know this switchman, Bruce. He always throws early. I'll hit the horns, and he'll switch it back just long enough to get us through before that big son of a bitch comes over onto our rails."
With that, he hit the air racks on the truck by pulling a cord near the headliner. "Three short, three long, three short." I shouted,
"SOS?"
He smiled.
"He'll know it's me. We were in the Navy together."
We all peered through the snow and fog, and up ahead, in the far distance and barely a glimmer in the fog bank, was a light.
"Is that what I think it is?"
He nodded his head and hunched a shoulder over the steering wheel.
"Another coal train headed east."
"And through us?"
Lucian joined me in bracing both hands against the dash, for all the good that was going to do.
"How long before we know if he switched us through?"
The driver pushed the throttle some more, continuing with his Morse dots and dashes.
"Any time now."
I peered through the windshield, trying to ignore the growing orb slightly to our left.
"Will there be another indicator?"
"Nope."
"So we just have to get to the switch before the other train does?"
"You got it."
I glanced at the speedometer on the dash. "We go straight, right? I mean, we don't have to change directions, do we?" He glanced down.
"No, we'd roll at this speed."
"That's comforting."
"And then probably get run over by the train anyway."
He glanced at me.
"Say, who's the woman in the coal car?"
I stared at the man, amazed that he would ask a question like that at a time like this.
"A woman by the name of Yona Urecha."
"The Basque Rose?"
He took the cigarette from his mouth and licked his lips.
"The dancer from over at Dirty Shirley's?"
"You know her?"
He smiled and held the cigarette out, studying the glowing tip.
"Oh, hell yeah! I used to go over there every week after shift until she left."
His hands tightened on the wheel, and his head nodded up and down in determination.
"We have to damn well make it."
I took a deep breath and glanced at the old sheriff.
"Having fun?"
His jaw was tight and his eyes widened as we both turned and looked at the oncoming train.
"If I was next to the damn door, I'd make a jump for it."
With a sudden burst of clarity, the front end of the locomotive leaped into view like a building on wheels. A gigantic, stories high building on wheels. The driver gave one last rhythmical blast of the horns as we shot through the switch, and I saw the man standing by the levers, looking up at us with an amazed and horrified look on his face. The other train blew by us and continued east, rocking the cabin of the high rail like 100 fully loaded 18-wheelers, its own horns drowning out ours in an instant. All I could see in the side mirror were the flashing sides of the freight cars as they shifted onto the track where we'd just been only seconds ago. The driver gave one last blast of the air horns.
"Hell yeah, just like dragging them down in Douglas."
He turned to look at us.
"We used to play chicken down there after they closed the drag strip."
Lucian turned and looked at me as I glanced at the driver. "How many more switches?"
"Two."
Lucian muttered, "Jesus H. Christ."
"Nah, the others will see Bruce pulled his switch late and they'll figure something is up. They wouldn't send another train through on this line anyway, so we're good."
The rhythmical thumping of the rail joints continued to sound like a mechanical second hand, and all I could think of was a woman lying at the bottom of a coal car with the jarring off-and-on progression of 200 tons of the stuff thundering into each container, growing louder and louder.
"Can you climb out of one of those cars?"
The driver lit another cigarette, clamped it between his teeth, and offered the pack to us. "No, thanks, even though the conditions have me thinking about taking it up." He nodded and stuffed the cigarettes back in his shirt.
"No way, the sides are smooth and close to 12 feet tall. I suppose if you were some kind of pro basketball player, maybe."
I thought about what her sister had said about Yona's abilities in the paint, but then remembered Rowan saying that he kept the women drugged. There was no way Yona Urecha was getting out of that coal car without help.
"How much farther?"
Fry checked his odometer.
"About a mile and a half."
"When we get closer, you're going to be able to stop this thing?"
"On a mercury dime, my friend."
I peered into the distance, the swirling clouds of snow worse with the passing freight that still roared and clanked only a few feet away.
"I think you're enjoying this more than we are."
Fry nodded and pulled the cigarette from his mouth.
"I rarely get to chase a train down with my truck and save a fair damsel in distress."
Lucian mumbled as he looked at me.
"You would have to flag down the craziest bastard that works for the entire Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad."
I ignored him and watched the distance ahead, finally spotting a couple of lights, strangely enough, arranged almost as if in a cross.
"Is that it?"
"Yeah, I think so."
"It looks big."
"Well, it's a train."
My eyes widened as I realized, for the first time, that the back of this train was being pushed by a locomotive. My hands crept out to the dash, as did Lucian's.
"Is that an engine?"
He squinted his eyes and took the cigarette from his mouth again, and I was pretty sure he was judging time by how fast he was smoking it.
"Don't worry about it. It's a couple of pushers they've got in the back."
The lights of the coal train were impressive and enough to let the driver know to hit his brakes as the string lights of the coal mine's delivery system lit up the sky like Russian Christmas.
"How are we going to gauge our gapping distance?"
"You said it runs about 3 miles an hour. Doesn't the last car have a ladder on it?"
He tucked the cigarette into the corner of his mouth like the bolt action on a rifle.
"Yeah, but do you know how fast 3 miles an hour is when you're out there slipping and sliding around on the ice and snow beside a moving train?"
I stared at the oncoming single light. "How close can you get?" He glanced at me and then at the train ahead, consistently applying pressure on the brakes.
"I told you I can put you nose to nose."
I began rolling down the window with the manual crank.
"Do it."
Lucian looked at me.
"What the hell do you think you're doing?"
I pulled the Colt Walker and rested it on the dash. "The hood of this truck gives me a 6-foot height advantage. All I've got to do is make it from the front of this thing onto the observation platform of that locomotive."
He shook his head. "Have you lost your mind?"
I unbuckled my safety belt and nudged over to the door as Fry slowed, judging the distance between us and the back of the train.
"I'm open to suggestions."
The train continued its crawl forward. The driver turned to look at me.
"You see what we're up against?"
"I do."
I took a deep breath.
"From here to the loader, how many cars would you say we've got?"
He studied the distance.
"Less than 20, probably 16 at best."
There wasn't much wind, but the patterns of the few falling snowflakes were disorienting, to say the least. I gripped the headache bar that protected the top of the cab and rested my rear near the windowsill. I started to reach out and pull myself up when I heard the crashing noise of the coal being loaded. 1 minute between loads. That was a fast 60 seconds. I waited until the driver roared forward and positioned himself right behind the train, almost to the point where I was sure we were going to run into it. Bracing my hand, I slipped a boot up onto the seat and could feel the strongest grip in Absaroka County latch onto my leg to make sure I didn't slip. Lucian let go, and I pulled my other leg after and lodged my boot on the windowsill, pushed off and landed with my chest on the headache rack. Then I grabbed hold of the spare tire that was mounted there with both hands, ignoring the numbness in my arm. Lucian called out from the cab, "You all right?" Standing on the sill, I edged forward, glancing down at the slick white hood of the one-ton truck. "Yep." The clanking cacophony continued again, and the train surged forward with another tremendous crashing noise. Another load, another minute. I held on as the driver crept forward, trying to buy me time. As soon as he stopped the truck, I took the leap of faith onto the hood and watched with satisfaction as it dented, providing me with a shallow divot in which to stand. I stooped and crept forward, extending my good hand toward the opening in the railing at the center ladder, figuring the more visibility I gave Fry, the better. Looking past my fingers, I tried to gauge the distance beyond the high rail gear, the tail mechanism that had taken the place of a caboose, and the front of the pushing locomotive, a good 10 feet at least. The train continued forward with another thunderous load, and I looked down at my feet and laughed at the absolute absurdity of the situation. I stepped back on the hood and placed a foot against the windshield, looking down at the driver, his face blurred by the reflection of the glass and the patterns of the snow. I shouted, "Nose to nose!" I watched the determination tighten his face as he hit the accelerator, and I stepped forward just as the front of the high rail struck the back of the train. I could feel my boots slipping on the sheet metal and my arms involuntarily stretched out as I left the truck, the forward momentum lifting me up into the delicate, flake-filled air. Chapter 15. There are few things in the world harder than a locomotive, let me tell you. My hand locked around the top of the left side railing in a death grip, while the rest of me swung to the right and tangled around the other railing and the headlamp mount. My face hit the chain between the railings, which damn near strangled me, but hopefully didn't pull the bandages covering the wound on my neck. But it was the numbness in my right hand that caused me to slip. I kicked my boots into the hoses below me, hoping for any kind of purchase, finally wrapping a leg around the side long enough to get my other boot on a tread and ease the pressure. Pulling my hat down tight, I scrambled up onto the platform and discovered that the ladder led to nowhere. I turned and looked at Fry, and he stuck a hand against the windshield with a finger pointing up. Great. Hoisting myself, I landed onto the hood of the great orange and black beast and even had time to glance in the cab, green-lit and eerily vacant. I climbed over the top and looked down the expanse of the thing, the cars disappearing in the ground fog. Loping along and feeling like a train robber in some sort of old black-and-white movie, I got to the end of the locomotive and was pleased to see another ladder leading down to another platform that provided easy access to the last coal car. There was another loud noise as I started down the ladder, and once again the only thing on my mind was, that was a fast 60 seconds. Jumping the gap between, I started up the ladder on the left and lunged over the edge to look inside. The ambient light from the mine illuminated half of the car, but the side closest to me was a contrast in complete darkness. I could see that there was a long board, possibly a 2x12, sticking up from the middle of the coal car and extending to the corner, and on closer inspection I could see another lying on top of it. I concentrated on the darkness and yelled her name, in hopes that she might hear me over the tremendous roar of the coal being loaded. "Yona!" My eyes began adjusting, but all I could see was the snow sprinkled with a fine coating of coal dust that had drifted in the bottom of the car. All I could think of was the remark that Lucian had made about the unfortunates who had met their demise at the bottom of 200 tons of coal, pulverized pepper steak. I stared into the darkness, willing my eyes to see her just as the mile-long train jerked forward, and I made the mental note that there had been 4 cars filled since we'd gotten there, which meant that if the driver's calculations were correct, we had only 12 or so cars to go. I looked down the rails, but with the fog, I couldn't even see the cars in the distance, let alone count how many had been filled. Looking back, I shook my head and tried to figure out where she might be. "Yona!" My eyes wandered to the boards half lying there, and I had the horrible thought that he must have walked her along on them and then dropped her by dropping her in the next-to-last car. There were 5 support rails spanning the last car's width, and I was going to have to fish the 2x12s out
and get them up onto those supports before I could get to the next car up the line. I was reaching for the boards when the thunderous noise came again, and I lurched forward, which almost threw me into the empty container. Scrambling, I counterbalanced, slapped my hands against the rungs of the ladder, and clung there, my right arm reminding me that it wasn't 100%. I turned back to the job at hand and counted in my head. 11 cars to go. It was an estimate, but the high rail driver had impressed me as a man who knew whereof he spoke. Grabbing the end of the top board, I leveraged it from the car and began the arduous task of trying to balance it on the edge, turning it toward the middle and getting the end up onto one of the nearest supports. The edge of the board tipped over the edge of the support, so I was going to need the other board to span the length of the car. Following the same maneuver, I leveraged the second board up and clattered it onto the supports parallel to the first one, but I was sweating like a bottle of beer in a biker bar. Climbing onto the nearest board, I pushed the other one ahead, watching it slide on the ice and go about half the distance I wanted it to. Trying to gauge just how many of my 60 seconds were left, and figuring not many, I loped a few steps forward, grabbed the end of the second board, and pushed it, watching as it shot forward, bumping on the far edge and sliding past the end of the board where I now stood, creating a gap of about 2 feet. You have got to be kidding. I crept forward onto the unsupported 4 feet that was left of the first board, feeling the length of the thing tip up behind me. There wasn't anywhere to stand, so I backed up and hunkered down in a 3-point stance. I was getting an idea of the timing of the loaders and figured I could use the momentum of the moving cars to assist me in the traverse. Clutching both sides of the board, I waited, and it didn't take long for the loading to recommence. 9 cars to go. Feeling the surge of the train as it continued pulling all its tonnage, I threw myself forward when I was sure we were moving together at peak speed, clomping down the 2x12 as if it were a wooden boardwalk. Feeling the first board begin to give way beneath me, I leaped and watched as the train cars continued at their steady pace, leaving me to fly forward like a cue ball on a clean break. I really hadn't had to worry about the gap as I sailed over that with no problem. What I should have worried about was landing halfway onto the frost-covered second board and sliding over the side between the two cars. Gripping the 2x12 like a lemur, I put a hand out and was able to stop my forward momentum enough to slide sideways with my legs hanging down between the last and next-to-last cars. Swallowing hard, I threw a leg back onto the board, reached out and grabbed the lip of the next car just enough to allow me to get mostly back on the board, wondering how Tom Mix did this shit on a regular basis. I forced the top of my body over the edge and looked down into the car, and in the contrast of dark and light, there, sticking out into the flat beam of the mine's arc lights, half buried in the drifts, was a woman's leg. I forced the name from my mouth with all the air I could muster. Yona! Staring at the leg, hoping it would move. There was no response. Yona! Nothing. Edging to the side, I figured the only way to get down into the car, and more important, back out, was on the board that had just tried to kill me. With the boot on the ladder, I brought it forward and tipped it down past her leg. I looked at the angle, trying to judge if I'd be able to climb back out.